Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Tzadi Gimel. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin 4 lines from the top. Before beginning, we have already noticed a series of triangles just by scanning down the page. You see this series of triangles, and they are explained in the outside margin. Before we look at the note under our Nosei Mivne heading, we just want to pay attention to the fact that as you go on the page, the triangles change form into a type of dashed triangle, and that will be explained. In the outside margin, you can see a triangle is featured, and they represent, as all geometric shapes do in our Gemara marking system, a series marker. And we've written, Memros Shel Rabbi Abba Omar Bihuda Omar Shmuel, a series of comments or statements or laws taught by Rabbi Abba, quoting Rabbi Huda, quoting Shmuel, Be'inyan Chelev Vidam. They all relate to the topics of either Chelev and or dam. Chelev being what's so often called forbidden fats, but as we will see in the sugya, it includes different types of membranes as well. And dam, blood. The dashed triangle are Memros Shel Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, or at times Rabbi Yehuda alone. But you'll notice that these are all names that started initially as a, we'll call it a triple quote, Rabbi Abba quoting Rabbi Yehuda, quoting Shmuel, and then as the Gemara went on, it became whittled down two and then one name quoted. Turning now to the Gemara. Gufa. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Rabbi Abba, Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Shmuel. This quote, by the way, when the Gemara says Gufa, it's a reference to something that had been mentioned earlier and now is going to be focused upon. The earlier reference was on Tzadi Beis, Omid Beis. You'll notice we have a little star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text indicating Tzadi Beis, Omid Beis. You would look back to Tzadi Beis, Omid Beis to the right-hand side of the Gemara text and find a star over there and see where this was cited. We should also point out that as we go on in this Gemara, there will be a number of body references to the animal. And we have recommended in the past to have access to a book of illustrations. We have been recommending one of those books is called Sichas Chulin, authored by Amitai Ben David. Use of that book would make this sugya very helpful because we are not going to engage in translation of technical terms, but rather use the Gemara term as is for explaining what we are learning. So, once again, if you get a hold of a book of illustrations, it will make this Gemara much easier to understand and appreciate. So, we continue now with Rabbi Abba, Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, Chelev, Shabosor, Chofe, Oisoi, Muter. Fats, or chelev, found in the body of an animal, that flesh covers it. That kind of chelev is mutter. Eini, is that really so? The Omar Rabbi Abba, Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, Hai Tarba, the Tusi, Masni, Osir. Tarba is chelev, fat. Underneath Masni, Masni is a part of the animal, sometimes called Masnayim. The fat that's under the masni is forbidden. So how can you say that, in this quoting the same party, you're saying that chelev that's that but Bosser covers it. Well, isn't this a case of Bosser covering it and yet he says it's forbidden? Omar Abaye. Abaye explains the following. Behemo b'chayeha pruki mifrika. An animal, while it's alive and walking, it stretches different parts of the animal, stretch and contract. As a result of that, this the mosnayim that were just referred to, as it's walking, actually becomes exposed. The fat that was just referred to, the tarba, becomes exposed, so it's not always covered. So we don't call it chelev that's covered by meat or by flesh. Dioma Rabbi Yochanan, ano lav tabcho ano v'lav bar tabcho ano. Rabbi Yochanan says, I am not a butcher, nor am I the son of a butcher. Unahirno, and I remember the hochi havul amri be'medrosha. But I remember that this is what people used to say in the Beis Medrash, in the Torah study location. Behemo b'chayo pruki mifrika. An animal, when it's alive, it's elastic, so to speak. It's in movement, and therefore there are parts that of the internal parts that at times are, in fact, not covered, where the chaylev is not covered, but it itself is a reaches a surface, so to speak. It's not covered by other organs or flesh. Omar Rabbi Abba, Omar of Yehuda, Omar Shmuel. Chelev Sha'al Hemsis, Ubeis HaKoisois, Asurin, V'onosh Koris. The chelev that's found on these different parts of the stomach apparatus of an animal are the chelev found in these places that's on the Hemsis and the Beis HaKoisois is forbidden, and it carries with it a Kores penalty, the severe punishment known as Kores for eating the real Torah forbidden chelev. V'zehu chelev shal hakerev. This is the chelev that is referred to often as chelev al hakerev. There is a Rashi, Hemsis ubeis hakosos besof hakerev, velo zehu ikur chelev hamachasis hakerev shikorin tailo. Shu toisiv krum v'niklav, aval oso chelev hamachasis hakerev, dovuk lechelev shal hemsis ubeis hakosos. Rashi here is describing the location and the nature of this particular chelev. We continue in the Gemara. The Omar Rabbi Abba Omar of Yehuda Omar Shmuel, hai tarbo de klibusta, osur the onush kores, the tarbo the chelev of the klibusta. This is a small bone that's found in the rear of the animal. And the chelev that's found at that point by the klibusta is forbidden, and it too carries with it a kores penalty. Vizehu chelev sha'al haksolim. This is known as the chelev on the ksolim, which is also a Torah prohibited chelev. When we say Torah prohibited, this is in contrast with other chelevs that the Rabbanan imposed a restriction on, but is of rabbinical restriction, but not Torah restriction. And as such, it wouldn't carry with it the kores penalty. You can see with our markings, we've emphasized with a diamond introducing vizehu, the word vizehu, this is, and we've dashed, underlined the name of the chelev. These are the primary chelevs that carry with them the kores penalty. V'omar Rabbi Abba Omar of Yehuda Omar Shmuel, chutin shebiyad, asurin. The chutin literally strings, that are removed from the shoulder of an animal are forbidden. Omar Rav Safra. Rav Safra, upon hearing this, says, Moshe, mi Omar Rachmona lo sechul bisra. The term Moshe is a term used for as Talmud Chochem. Rav Safra is reacting to Rabbi Abba and he says, can you really say this? Does the Torah using the expression Moshe, you're a Talmud Chacham. Do you really believe that? Does the Torah forbid the eating of meat? In other words, when Rav Safra heard Rabbi Abba make mention to Chutin, he Rav Safra understood that as just a type of part of the flesh. Bosar, why should that be forbidden? Omar Rava Moshe Mi Omar Rachmana Echol Doma. So Rava, responding to Rav Safra, says, how could you say that it's allowed? Why do you call it Bosar? It's dam. It's full of blood. Chadche u'malche, if you take these chutin, and they are essentially arteries and veins, if you cut them open and salt them, the salt absorbs the blood, and if you do that, afilu likdeiro nami shapir domi, then you can even boil them up. And what's meant by this, even boil them up, is that if you don't choose the boiling method of or cooking up the food, but rather roasting of the food, then you must roast it over an open fire in order for the blood to be drawn out of it. However, if you want to cook it, you have to salt it first. So he's saying here that if you cut it open and salt it, then you can even cook it up. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel, Reish Me'ayo Ba'amsa Bo'i Grera. Let us take a look at the Rashi on this. Reish Me'ayo Kishehadakin Yotze Min HaKeva. When the intestines emerge from the end of the stomach, the series of stomachs, in the animal's digestive system, tzorach ligarer chilev shalein oirech amo. Now, the intestine is a long organ, so for an amo is a distance. For the distance of an amo in the intestine, you have to scrape off its surface. V'zehu chilev shal hadakin. That material, the substance that is scraped off, is the chelev, called the chelev shal hadakin, the chelev on the dakin, which is another one of the formal chelevs. In fact, there is an argument concerning this between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva, Rashi points out, in the third perek of this Masechta. So we have highlighted with our markings what is the chelev al hakerev, the chelev al haksolim, and the chelev al hadakin. The Omar Rav Yehuda, chutin, now you notice here we actually started just before this, the dashed triangle, and that's because we are only quoting part of the names that we started off this series marking with. And now we see only one name quoted, the Omar Rav Yehuda, chutin sheba oikets, Asurin. The chutin, once again, strings that are found, strings, and as we go on in the Gemara, we'll see why we have to translate this as using the term strings, because and not be too specific. At times, these are arteries, in other words, they're in effect tubes that are blood related, and at times they are there's a reference to strings as strands of chelev. So in the meantime, we have chutin in the oikets part of the animal, which is toward the back of the animal. There are chutin there. Chamisha chuti is be bekaflo. Kaflo is a term referring to the oikets. Rashi says in Dibur Matzchol Sheba Oketz, he says Hainu Chamisha Chuti de Kafli, and these five strings are divided as follows: Tlosa Mimino, Vitarti Mismola. Three are found on the right side, two on the left side. Tlosa Miftzili Letre Tre. The three, each one of them branches into two. So each one of the three chutin that are on the right side, each one branches into two more. Trey, the two that are on the left side, miftsili letlosa tlosa, each one of them branches into three. Nafgamina, the purpose of knowing this and the benefit of knowing about this is as follows. The ishalif lehu ad dechamimi mishtalfi. If you are, let's say, quick to remove it while it's still warm. In other words, if shortly after the animal is slaughtered, so there's still the standard body temperature, and while it's warm, they are easily extracted. The e loi, and if not, then if you're going to wait till everything cools off, and then attempt to extract these chutin, boi chatuti basrayo, then you're going to have to seek out, you have to like dig out and find all of these chutin, and that can involve a lot of work. So it's good to know ahead of time how much work you're going to have on your hands by the description of all these chutin and their branchings in order to be motivated to remove it while it's still warm. Omar Abaye, v'itemer of Yehuda, chamisha chuti havu. There are five forbidden chutim. Tlosa mishum tarbo, utrein mishum doma. Three of them are chilev related, and two of them are dam related. Now, this five is not a reference to the five we had just before. The five we had just before is one of the examples that we will see here. Now, this is talking about areas, five areas of chutin that are forbidden. Of the five areas, it breaks down into three of them are prohibited because of chelev, and two of them are classified as blood-related. Blood-related because of their being tubes, like veins and arteries, blood vessels. Now, the Gemara spells it out. D'tachli u'dekafli u'dekuyasa mishum tarba. The chutin that are associated with the toil, sometimes translated as a spleen, or the kafli, or the kuyasa translated as kidneys. Those chutim in these three different organs are mishum tarba, are forbidden because of chilev. However, de yoda u de lo'a mishum dama, the chutin in regarding the yoda, we had a reference to this before, and we spoke about the shoulder. This was what we found in Rashi, Chutin Shebiyad, above. We made reference to Rashi there, that had to do with the vessels in the shoulder, and the Deloa, the jaw. Those vessels or strings that are removed are blood-related. Lamai nafgamina, why? Of what benefit is there in my knowing this breakdown? Three chelev and two are dam, and which ones are which? Hani demishum doma I mechatechlu molachlu shapir domi. So the benefit is as follows: that those that are dam related, we know that if you cut them open and salt them, so then you can consume them. That shapir domi, it's good. However, Hanoch, the others, the ones that are chelev related, less lehu takanta, they have no solution, because chelev is objectively a problem, and there's no way it is a substance of that's prohibited. Dam is a substance that can be removed, and the vessel that contained the blood is okay. You can eat that. As we said, provided you salt it and then rinse it off properly. That's called kashering it, and that makes it allowed. Omar Rav Tana, v'itema Rav Yehuda, chamisha kromi havu. There are five membranes, kromi, like the word krum meaning a membrane. There are five membranes, five different areas where membranes are found, and there's a breakdown here, like we just had. Tlosa mishum tarba, utre mishum dama. Three are chelev related, and two are blood related. In other words, the membranes are full of tiny blood vessels, and hence their problem is blood oriented. And now the breakdown. The tachli, the kafli, the kulyasa, mishum tarba. the membranes found on the tchul, the kafli, and the kuyusa, which, by the way, are the three organs that we mentioned of just a few lines up when dealing with the chutin. Here we have a discussion concerning membranes, and like before, we saw the chutim there by the tachli, kafli, and kuyusa were tarbot related. Here, the membranes are likewise tarbot related. And this is just to explain another aspect of the markings. You see, we've squiggle underlined chamisha kromi havu. This enable you to contrast or compare with what we had above, chamisha chuti havu, which is also squiggle underlined. Continuing, debei udemukra. Mishum Dhamma, the membranes, and now these are new terms, we did not have them before. Debei is a reference to, bei means eggs, but it's a reference to the testicles of a male animal. Those, that organ has a membrane around it. And the mokra is the brain, that too has a membrane. The problem of those membranes is Mishum Dhamma, is dam related, blood related. Rabbi Yehuda Baroshaya, Havet ko kolif le tachla, le levi brei dravhuna barchia, Havet ko goyim le me'eloi. There's a little story here that involves the removal of chelev of a tchol, how much needs to be removed. And this is what we've indicated under our no say heading in the outside margin. So we had just a moment before mentioned that there's an issue of a membrane concerning the tchol organ, and here's a story involving how to ready, how to prepare tchol as far as membrane removal. The issue, how much has to be removed. So Rav Yehuda was preparing tchol for Levi, and how was he doing it? So the Gemara said, "Kogoyim have kogoyim le meloi." That means he was removing the upper, outer level of membrane. The Rashi says, "B'mokum ovya," where the tchol is wide or thick. Omale chos beitvei. So it would appear that Levi says to Rav Yehuda, "You've got to dig out more, not just a surface removal where it's wide, but you've got to." Got to get into it more. Rashi says, "Chos beitve shaloha yakol fo elo begovo." He, the Rav Yehuda, was peeling it only at the high part where it rises, the mokum ovio, where it's thick. Shehu mechuber shom lekeres lechelev. That's a point at which it's attached. The tchol is attached to the keres. The Omar lo klof vereid ad maton. He was saying, "You've got to continue removing more." Also, Avua Ashkeche. So his father came and found what was going on. Omar le, Hochi Omar Avua diimoch mishum derav. So his father says, "Thusly says your maternal grandfather in the name of Rav." Umanu, who is this maternal grandfather that's quoting Rav? Rabirmi of Abba. Lo asra Torah elo shal hadad bilvan. That you don't have to dig down further. The Torah forbids only the part that's al-hadad, and Rashi says that's mokum ovio, only on the thick part of the tchol. The Gemara asks, "Eini v'homa rav hamnuna, tana, krom she'al hatchol osir v'ein chayoven olav." Rav Hamnuna has this Tanaic source, which we feature in a frame, as we do all Tanaic sources, that the krum, the membrane on the tchol, is forbidden, but there's no kores penalty. Hechidomi, what is this source referring to? Ilei moshal hadad, if it's referring specifically to the krum that's on the wide part of the tchol, then amayin chayoven olav. Why are you saying that that doesn't carry with it the kores penalty? That is the real chelev. Ela dekulei. Rather, it's referring to the rest of the tchol, the rest of the krum around the tchol. So we see from this that to suggest that the only forbidden part is on the dad, and you don't have to do more, you really do need to do more. Omar lay, so he said back, "I tanya tanya." Well, if that be the case, then if it's taught in a source, you can't argue with the sources. And therefore, you do have to remove more. Gufo, Amar Rav Hamnuna, Tana. We just quoted Rav Hamnuna a few lines up and how we're going to focus on his source. The source says, Krum sha'al hatchul asur v'ein chayovin olav. Krum sha'al gabi kuya asur v'ein chayovin olav. So this source makes reference to two membranes, the krum on the tchul, and the krum, the membrane, on the kuya, on the kidney. Regarding both of them, the source says, there is no kores penalty. They are forbidden, but no kores penalty. Ah, v'hotanyo chayovin olav. But we have a brisa that deals with these same two organs, the tchul and the kuya, and their respective krums, and says in this brief source that there is a kores penalty. The Gemara resolves tchul atol lo kashya, and the next line you'll see kuya al kuya nami lo kashya. The Gemara at this point resolves these two sources. We should point out that we have also provided here a topic heading, which is already now obvious to us, but we've written on the side the nosei liyashev stira ben shnei brises binyan chiyuv al hakrumim shal hatchol v'al hakuya. The role of this piece of Gemara is to resolve the seeming contradiction between these two sources, and that's what we're about to do now. With the squiggle underline you can see highlights where each point is resolved. So at the reading back in the Gemara, tchol atchol lo kashya, there is no contradiction regarding the tchol membrane issue. Ha keneged hadad, ha shelo keneged hadad. The one that is chayav, the source that says chayav, that there is a kores penalty, that's a reference to the membrane that's opposite the thick part or the wide part of the tchol. The source that says ein chayovin, that's where it's further down around the tchol, but not opposite the wide part of it. That is forbidden. The krum, the membrane there, is forbidden, but not with a kores penalty. Kuya kuya nami lo kashya. Regarding the kuya as well, there is no contradiction. Ha bi'ilor, ha betato. There is the upper part of the organ and the lower part. Regarding the upper part, that is chayav. That's chelev mamish. That's called chelev shal hakloyes. And there is a lower part, and that's osir, but it's not chayav kores. Bei Hashilta. We have a new discussion now, and this is explained or introduced by the introduction in the outside margin, the nosei. Bei Hashilta, what is that? Those are beitzei zohar, these are testicles. Hameurim begufo, shenim achu, they're contained within the body of the animal, however, they've been crushed. Machlokes im chayovim aleihem mishum aver min hachai. The Gemara here will be asking that are these considered in their current state as an organ detached while the animal is alive? So in general, you should be aware of a very well-known prohibition. We say well-known because it's a prohibition that affects all of humanity, and that's the prohibition of eating a limb or organ removed from a live animal. In this case, the testicles were damaged, but they're still contained within the scrotum of the animal. So is the fact that they're still inside covering the scrotum, the fact that they're still, we'll call it, somewhat internal, they're inside the animal yet, so they're not considered detached in the aver min hachai sense, and therefore when you slaughter the animal with its crushed beitzim, it's a regular shechita, and it covers that limb or that organ as well. Or do you say the fact that it's detached from its natural point of connection within the animal, it's considered detached, even though it hasn't been it hasn't emerged to what's called avir ha'olam. It hasn't emerged to the outside. And if you say that, then it would be considered Eiver Menachai. Since it's detached from its natural connection, it would be viewed as Eiver Menachai. The Gemara, Beye Hashilta. As we mentioned, these are crushed testicles. And this explanation we are taking from the Rabbeinu Gershom and combining it with Rashi. The Rabbeinu Gershom, you see at the very bottom, we've underlined, Bei Hashilta, Klomar Beitzim, Hameuchim, Uchim are crushed, Kamo Moch Vekosus. And Rashi says, Bei Hashilta, Beitzei Zohar, Hameurim Begufa. They're still contained within the animal's body. Rav Ami, Rav Asi, Chad Osar, Vechad Shori. These two rabbis argue. One says it's Osar, and the Isser, the prohibition, is Eiver Menachai, means since they're detached from their natural connection, while before the animal was slaughtered, it's considered a limb removed from a live animal. Vechad Shori, and the other allows, permits it, meaning that since it hasn't emerged to the outside, it's still contained within the animal, it's allowed, and the shechita that you do will cover it. Man de osar, the one who prohibits, midelo kobaryon hani ever minachayinu. Since if the animal were not shechted, would continue to live, they would not heal. They would remain that till the end of the animal's life. Therefore, since they wouldn't heal, it's therefore it's viewed as detached. It's and therefore classified as Eiver Menachai, limb from living organ, living animal. Man Deshari, the one who allows these Beitzim Hameuchim, Midolo Kom Misruchon, Hani Chiyusa Is Vehu. Since as time goes on, they may not improve, but they also don't rot inside the animal. They remain as they are till the end of the animal's life, if it wouldn't be shechted. So it shows that it's not considered detached, because if you had, let us say, the limb of an animal that's completely detached, it would rot in a matter of days. These crushed beitzim don't rot. The idach. Now the Gemara goes back and forth. How does each opinion look at the observation of the other opinion? So the idach, the one who does call it Eiver Menachai, hai delo komisruchan, the fact that it's not rotting doesn't show that it's not detached. It is detached. However, the lack of rotting is delo kosholet buavira, because it's not exposed to the outside. It's like we could call something that's vacuum packed. It's something that's totally, you have that with lots of fruits and vegetables that are totally detached, but they're in a vacuum pack. There's no air that affects them, and that's why there's no rotting. But no one would claim that something that's in a vacuum pack is still attached. The idoch, the one that is lenient, that's matir and does not view it as Eiver Menachai. Ah, but what about the fact that it doesn't get better? Hai delo baryon, the fact that it doesn't get better. Kichishusahu denokalu, it's simply because it's weakened. It's a weakened organ, but it doesn't mean that it's detached. Omar le Rabbi Yochanan Rav Shamon ba'Abba. Hani bei chashilta sharyon. Rabbi Yochanan declares that as far as letter of the law is concerned, they are allowed. They are not considered Eiver Menachai. However, ve'at lo techol, but you, Rav Yochanan, in addressing Rav Shaman, says, you, Rav Shaman, don't eat them. Mishum v'altitosh terasi mecha. That's a posuk, but it also has halachic ramifications, and it means that if you come from a place where they practice a restriction, you must continue observing that, because that's the custom of your place. So that even though for us, which we don't have that custom, you who come from a place where it was prohibited, you must continue that practice and not eat them. Omar Mor Bar Ravashi, Hani Bey de Gadio. We're continuing to talk about testicles, and we're going to refer to the testicles of a goat. Ad Talsin Yoimin Sharian Below Klipa, till it reaches 30 days of age. In other words, a newborn goat. Its beitzim are allowed. You can, in other words, if you slaughter it, you slaughter this very young goat, the beitzim are allowed, of course, we're talking about the male beitzim, the testicles, are allowed to be eaten without having to do a prior peeling of membrane. And the reason for that is because, in general, the membrane of the beitzim are blood-related. We made reference to this at the lower part of Omid Aleph, where we saw Rav Yudah make reference to the Hamisha Krumi, and the Gemara there had mentioned two of the five are blood-related, and one of them was the Bei, the testicle membrane. However, this being a very young animal, it hasn't developed a complete, we'll say, a blood circulation, or complete blood supply and circulation, so that the blood hasn't reached that part of the animal's anatomy. And therefore, in other words, only in time as the animal matures do the blood vessels become developed in that area, and hence there is a need to do the peeling to remove the blood issue. However, up till 30 days, you don't have to do the membrane removal. Mikan v'elech, beyond 30 days, the following standard applies. E Azron Asurin, V'ilo Azron Sharyan. Azron is a reference to development of the male reproductive substance, the semen. So if the animal is able to produce a zera, then that indicates a level of maturity, physical maturity, whereby the membrane around this organ would already have blood vessels that would be of concern to us. If it's low azron, if it doesn't produce zera, so then it's allowed, even though it's beyond 30 days. Minoy adinon, how could we know whether it's capable of producing zera? So the Gemara answers, another observation can be applied. He is behu shuraiki sumaki asiron. If you see red strands in it, those are shuraiki sumaki. Sumaki are red, and shuraiki strands. Red strands in it. That is an indication that there is a blood problem. Less behu shuraiki sumaki. If the beitzim of this more than 30 day old goat don't have red strands in it, so it's mutter. Before going on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading, the Nosei Mivneh. The Gemara will refer to Umtzi, Bei, Umizriki. Three different things. Umtzi is like piece of meat, Bei are the testicles, and Mizriki are tubes or arteries. Shenirim Adom. If they appear red, drochim shonim lahotzi damam. The Gemara will show the different ways of kashering them, of making them a mutter as far as their blood content is concerned. You see, with the markings, the double underline highlights these different organs as the Gemara continues. The Gemara. After reading the three organs, the Gemara says, "Pligi bo Rav Acha v'Ravina." These two rabbis argue regarding a certain aspect, which will become clearer later in the Gemara. They have an argument, and in their argument, which we haven't spelled out yet, but in their argument, just skip the bracketed section for a moment. You'll notice a bracket length indicator to the immediate left-hand side of Gemara text, a vertical dash dotted line. If you notice the end of that vertical dash dotted line, the line in the Gemara where the brackets closes. So the Gemara there says, "V'hilchasok Rav Acha l'kula." In the as of yet unexplained machlokes between Rav Acha and Ravina. The Gemara rules like Rav Acha, who is lenient. As I said, we haven't seen their machlokes yet, so the Gemara is presenting something sort of out of order, you may say. It's giving you the final ruling before telling you what their argument is about. Now, we skipped a few lines, and we go back to that. Within the brackets, the Gemara makes an observation concerning Rav Acha and Ravina in their controversies throughout the Torah. B'chol ha-Torah kula, in their arguments, namely between Rav Acha and Ravina, where you see the names stated, and then the Gemara will say, one says this way and one says that way, using pronouns, you can rest assured that after presenting the two names, and then the two different opinions, without attaching a name to an opinion, just saying, for example, in other sukkahs you might find, the Gemara says, Ravina and Rav Acha argue about X. One of them, without saying their name, says a lenient ruling, and the other one, again, without stating the name, says stringently. So here the Gemara says, B'chol ha-Torah kula Ravina l'kula v'Rav Acha l'chumra. Ravina will take the more lenient approach, and Rav Acha the more strict approach. And the Hilchasuka Ravina l'kula. And in all of those cases, we will follow Ravina with his lenient ruling. Labar mehani klas. With the exception of these three, the cases of Umtzabei Umizriki, the Rav Acha l'kula v'Ravina l'chumra. In these three cases, Rav Acha happens to be the lenient approach, Ravina the more restrictive, V'ilchasa k'Rav Acha l'kula, and once again, we will follow the lenient approach. In this case, or in these cases, these three examples, Rav Acha happens to be the lenient approach. So you can see that in Ravina and Rav Acha controversies, the Gemara wants to always rule according to the lenient opinion. Whether it be that of Ravina or Rav Acha, that's of less importance as far as a final ruling is concerned. Final ruling in all of their controversies will be taking the lenient side. It just so happens that in general, Ravina takes the lenient approach. In these three cases, Umtzabei Umizriki, which we still haven't explained what their machlokas is, but whatever it is, we will take the lenient approach, and it happens to be that of Rav Acha's. Now the Gemara gets involved with greater detail. Umtza de asmik. Umtza is a piece of meat that has a reddish look to it. Chotcha umolcha, if you cut it into many pieces and then salt it, afilu likadera nami shapir domi, you can even cook it up. Cook it up means put it in a pot with water and prepare it like that. Talya nami bishpuda do'iv doma, if you put it on a spit in an oven, then you can roast it even without cutting it into small pieces. You can take we'll call it a hunk of meat that has a reddish look to it, put it on a spit in an oven, and it will roast. Rashi points out that one will put a little bit of salt on it. It was called kedei melichas tzli, but it's a small amount of salting that's done before a roasting. That's in contrast with cooking up in a pot. There you need to have a, relatively speaking, large amount of salt placed on the meat before cooking it up. Now, agomri, placing the hunk of meat directly on coals. This is slightly different than the case of talya. Talya means suspended on a shpud, on a spit. This is a case where you take the piece of meat and put it on the coals. Here, we finally see the above-referenced machlokis between Ravina and Rav Acha. Pligi bo Rav Acha v'Ravina. They argue. Chad omar mishav she'ivilei. Mishav Shivi means draws out, the placing on the coals, even though it's directly on the coals, nevertheless, the coals, the hot coals will draw out the blood, and that will enable you to then eat it. The Chad Omar, the other opinion, the more restrictive opinion, says, Mitzmas Tzamtzi Lei. Putting it directly on the coals causes the blood to be stopped up in the meat, and therefore the blood is essentially getting roasted or cooked up in the meat, and it's therefore forbidden to eat it. We are not allowed to consume blood. We have to make sure that the blood has been drawn out. So according to this opinion, by putting it directly on the coals, you're not enabling the blood to get completely drawn out. V'chein be'i, v'chein mizriki. The same is true with regard to the preparation of the be'i, the testicles, and the mizriki, the arteries. We now have another discussion, and you'll notice that we have Roman numeral number 1 to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, and a few lines later, a Roman numeral number 2. There are two versions represented here in how to kasher, or how to approach the case of what's called reisha b'kivsha. This is taking the head of an animal. The head of an animal has a lot of hair on it, and one is interested in getting the hair off, to remove the hair. And in order to facilitate that, one would put it into coals, and the hairs would burn off. Rashi points out that first you would wet it down with water and then put it in coals. Our issue right now is that you haven't formally kashered it. You haven't removed the blood. So what does this represent a problem? In fact, you haven't removed the blood beforehand, and you're taking this head. Your intention is to remove theirs, but you're putting it in coals. So, how do we deal with this? The Gemara. Reisha b'kivsha. Oisvei abeis hashchita. If you place the head in the coals with the cut part, the neck. Beis hashchita is the part of the head that was cut in the shchita process. So the bottom of the head where the neck is, if you place that Beis HaShchita face down, and it's facing downwards, so Dayev Doma, Dayev means flows, the blood will flow out into the coals, Vishori, and it's allowed. In other words, this would be a good way of ensuring the blood is completely removed. At Stodin, if you lay the head with its hair, you lay it down on its side in the coals, Mikva Kofi V'osir, the blood becomes congealed, hardened in the head, it doesn't get removed, doesn't flow out, and therefore it will be forbidden. Osve anechire. Let's say you positioned it with the snout or the nostrils of the head facing downwards. Now, it depends. Dots be midi, if you jabbed something into the nostrils, thereby creating an opening for blood to flow out, so then you've accomplished what would be the same as the Beis HaShchita, and when it's facing down into the coals, it's good, it works. The Eloi, if you didn't dots beimidi, if you didn't jab something in there, puncturing the nostrils, if you didn't jab something in there, then osir, it won't be allowed. Ikal Diamri, another version of this. Anachire v'abeis ashrita doiv. Here, the nostrils are viewed immediately as the same, as having the same status as the beis ashrita, the neck, and it will flow out, and apparently even without jabbing something into the nostrils. That's the unique feature of this second version. What about, does jabbing something come into play? So that's in the next case, atznodin. If you lay the head on its side, then we say, e dots be midi shari, the ilo, osir. If you jabbed something into the head, and then positioned it on the side, in other words, the spot that you jabbed something in, then the blood will flow out, the puncture wound that you made. Otherwise, if you don't jab something in, if you place it into the coals on its side, it will be forbidden. Gufa, Omar of Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, Shnei Gidin Haim. This piece of Gemara is introduced on the outside margin as Gidei HaPnimi, Gid HaPnimi VeGid HaChitzon. This is something that we've mentioned in the past. When dealing with the Gid HaNoshe, there is an outer Gid and an inner Gid. The Gid being a type of nerve. There's one that runs along the inside of the leg. In other words, the area that we would call between its legs, the part facing the other leg, and there's one running along the outside. Pnimi inside, chitzon outside. So the Gemara continues with Rav Yehuda Shmuel telling us there are two gidin, hapnimi somach le'etzem, osur v'chayovin olav. The inner one, which is described as being next to the bone, that is forbidden, and chayavin olav, one would be guilty lashes if he eats it. That's the Torah gid hanoshe. Chitzon, the one running on the outside part of the leg, somoch lebosar, embedded in its meat, that's forbidden. So it's osur v'ein chayavin olav, but it doesn't carry with it a penalty of lashing. The triangles here in the next couple lines introduce two sources which would seem to contradict the two points that Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel just made. So the Gemara asks, V'atanya pnimi somach lebasar. The Brisa describes the pnimi as being embedded in the flesh, not like Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel said, the pnimi was somach le'etzem. Answer, Omar Vacha, Omar Rav Kana, ikludi miklid. It branches out. Literally the word ikludi means a key, but just like a key fits into a lock, it's inserted into the panimi. This inner gid starts off near the bone, but it branches off into the meat. Once again, as we mentioned earlier, this sugya, as many others, will be understood in a much more graphic fashion if one has access to a book of illustrations. Like the book we have recommended, the Sichas Chulin. Continuing in the Gemara, V'ha Tanya, we have another source, though, that says, Chitzon Somoch Le'etzem, and just a few lines up, when Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel spoke, he described the Chitzon as being Somoch Le'bosar. Here, we have the Chitzon described as Somoch Le'etzem. Omar Rav Yehuda, Hecho de Pari Tabri. When the Chitzon is described as Somoch Le'etzem, that is where the Tabri, or the butcher's Pari, where they expose it. Rashi explains this in further detail. Let's glance at the Rashi. Across from here, Omar Rav Yehuda, Hecho de Pari Tabri. Havi Giluya, it is exposed. Bemokom Chata Hayerech, where the thigh is cut, kishenechteches v'nefreshes mino alyo, where the thigh is removed from the back of the animal, the area near the tail. At that point, when you cut the thigh off, have a rosh oisegid mechuba labuka shokuya kach shamati. At that point, the gid is attached to the joint that fits into the pelvis. So at that point, the chitzon, this outer gid, is next to the bone. But as it continues on its way down the leg, it becomes there. It becomes embedded in the meat, in the bosar. The Gemara now gets involved with a new discussion, and we have a slash mark indicating that this is unrelated to anything we've discussed before. This is a case of a taboch shenimso achrov chelev, we've indicated in the no say heading. This is a butcher who's selling meat, and we find that in the meat that he sells, the chaylev has not been removed. So in effect, he's causing a great stumbling block to the public. He's selling them meat, the public buys it, they think the chaylev has been removed, and lo and behold, we discover that this taboch is selling meat with chaylev in it. So the Gemara says, "Itmar taboch shenimso chaylev achrov," a butcher in whose meat we found chaylev. Rav Yehuda Omar b'kisaora. Rav Yehuda says that, well, we'll take. We become concerned if there is a barley size quantity of chaylev. It's a very small amount, the size of a barley grain. And Rabbi Yochanan Omar b'Kezayas, he says that the quantity is a bit larger, an olive quantity of chaylev. Omar Rav Papa v'lo pligi, there's no machlokas, there's no argument between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yochanan. They're referring to two different points, two different aspects. Kan lahal koso, the olive quantity, if found, will result in our lashing the butcher. He'll get a physical punishment. Kan, if you find a lesser amount, the barley grain amount, that's la'avro, to have him removed from his position, that he won't be able to work as a taboch anymore, but without the actual lashing. The Gemara continues with a further distinction between the Kesorah and Kezias amount. Omar Marzutra, Kesorah b'mokom echad. When we mention that a butcher can be removed if we find a barley grain quantity, that's provided it's concentrated in one spot. Kezias, the olive quantity, which would result in his getting lashed, that may be afilu b'shnayim shloshim mekomos. Even if you don't have an olive quantity in one spot, but as a result of collecting the different spots of chaylev that have been found, you would it would amount to a kezias quantity. That would be sufficient grounds for his being lashed. V'ilchasa, the Gemara rules la'alkoso b'kezias and li'avro b'kesora, that in order to lash him, it would have to be an olive quantity, and in order to remove him from office, a mere barley quantity of chaylev would be sufficient grounds for his removal. You can see with the numberings, we have what appears to be numbered backwards here, but that's in order to tie in the that which was said above with that which was said here, namely above, Rabbi Yochanan said b'kezias. So the Gemara is ruling here that that kezias amount is for lahakosa. So the two here corresponds to the two that we have above, where Rabbi Yochanan mentioned kezias, and here the Gemara is ruling like Rabbi Yochanan with regard to malchus. Likewise, the one corresponds to Rav Yehuda's comment above as well. Ein hatabochim nemonim. The Mishnah had mentioned that the tabochim, the butchers, are not believed regarding the removal of the gid hanoshe, and that was according to Rabbi Meir. The Chachomim said that they are believed on the gid and on the chaylev. The Gemara. And we should take note that we have two lishonos here, and this is indicated by the Roman numerals 1 and 2 that you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. In our Nosei Mivneh heading in the outside margin, we've indicated a 1 and 2, and we've written Shnei Lishonos, two versions of the Gemara. Ech poskim, how do we rule Lugabi Nemonus Hatabochim al Hotsoas Hagid? How are we to rule regarding the issue of the believability of the butchers regarding the removal of the gid hanoshe? The Gemara. Omer Rabbi Abba, Omer Rabbi Chiyo bar Abba, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Chozru lomar ne'emonim. they then ruled that they are believed. In other words, our Mishnah had said, "Ein hatabochim ne'monim al gid hanoshe." They differ be meir v'chachom omrim ne'monim. So the Gemara says they originally were of the opinion don't believe, and then they ruled they are believed. Omar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman, upon hearing this observation, says, "Achshu Dori, did they become more proper, more believable?" Literally, "Achshur," the word "kosher," becomes fit. Dori, the generation. Are you telling us that in the passage of time, people became more pious? Which is surprising, we'll say. The Gemara therefore answers, "No, that's not what happened here." Meikara, initially, the Havusavri law, Rabbi Meir, where the accepted ruling had been according to Rabbi Meir, lo havu mehemni. Now, to say that you rule like Rabbi Meir, this is a reference to a discussion that we saw on Tzadi Beis Amid Beis, the last daf of Gemara, previous daf. Rabbi Meir said that when removing the gid, you have to do chatita, means you have to dig it out from wherever it is, wherever it branches. It's a lot of work. So, something that requires a lot of work, you can't rely on people to do it. So, lo havu mehemni, so the butchers were not believed. Ulebasof, savri k'Rabbi Yehuda, but in the passage of time, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion was adopted. And Rabbi Yehuda does not require such an extensive removal of the gid hanoshe, and if you aren't requiring too much of the people, so they will do what they have to do. Miko demasni lo asefa. There are those that teach, that present this discussion regarding the seifa, which says v'chachom omrim ne'monim olov v'al hachelev. The Chachamim's opinion is that they are believed regarding the removal of the gid, that if you buy meat, you can rest assured that the gid has already been removed. Omar of Chiyo bar Abba, Rabbi Yochanan, Chozru lomar ein nemonim. This is now a different version. This has things presented that in the course of time, they then ruled that they are not believed. Omar of Nachman, Bizman hazeh nemonim. Here, Rav Nachman presents a fact. He says that nowadays, they are believed. And now the Gemara reacts, Achshu Dori, same type of reaction as we saw before, but in the first version, it was Rav Nachman who was saying it. Here, it's a reaction to what Rav Nachman is saying. Here, Rav Nachman is indicating that in the course of time, there is greater believability. So to that we react. What do you mean? Are you saying that people in the passage of time have become more pious? Hard to believe. So the Gemara says, no, that's not what we're referring to. Meikara savrua k'Rabbi Yehuda. At the beginning, the accepted approach was that of Rabbi Yehuda, which doesn't require a lot of effort in the removal of the gid. And at that point, the ruling was you can rely on them, on the butchers. Hoder savrua k'Rabbi Meir. But as time went on, the ruling went in favor of Rabbi Meir's approach. In other words, expecting a great expenditure of effort in the removal of the gid. Kamo dehavu dechiri lo l'Rabbi Yehuda lo mehemni. As long as the people remembered that there was a shita of Rabbi Yehuda, and they remembered that at a certain point we had ruled like Rabbi Yehuda, so that even though they were living in a time where the ruling had changed, the accepted ruling had gone in the strict way, however, there were people that remembered we once ruled leniently. So during an era like that, you couldn't rely on the people, on the butchers, to practice the newly accepted Rabbi Meir approach. However, v'hashta, but nowadays, d'anshiwa l'Rabbi Yehuda, people forgot that we ever paskin, that we ever ruled like Rabbi Yehuda, all people know is that you have to expend great efforts in removing the Gidan Hashem. They don't remember that there had once been a ruling not requiring that. So, Mehemni, they are believed. So, we see a very big difference between these two Lashonos. According to the first Lashon, if you're dealing with something that requires expenditure of effort, people are simply not believed to expend those efforts. According to the second version, you can have a situation where people are aware that they have to expend great efforts, and they will do it. That's provided that they have forgotten that there was ever another way. V'al hachelev. This is a quote from the end of the Mishnah. We've included a quote, we've written on the inside margin, line from the entire section of the Mishnah where this comes from. Let's read what we've written on the side. It says, V'ein hatabochem nemonim al gid hanosha div Rabbi Meir. So as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, he makes reference to the gid hanosha. Now, as a response to Rabbi Meir, V'chachomim omrim nemonim olov v'al hachelev. The Chachamim disagree, and they say that butchers are believed regarding the Gid Hanasha, which was a topic Rabbi Meir had addressed. But then the Chachamim insert, and they're believed also on the Chelev. When you have a Mishnah, a structure like that, you have someone responding to a previous opinion, we would assume that the points that the responder makes correspond to points that were mentioned earlier. As far as the existing Mishnah is concerned, Rabbi Meir addressed only one point, the Gid Hanoshe. The Chachomim, in their response, they add something that Rabbi Meir had not mentioned. The Chachomim add the issue of the Chelev. So the Gemara asks, Chelev mandekar shmei. Who mentioned anything about Chelev that would thereby warrant the Chachomim responding concerning the topic of Chelev? In other words, in the Reisha, where in the earlier part that we have quoted here, Rabbi Meir only addressed the issue of Gid Hanoshe. He didn't say anything about Chelev. So what motivated, what necessitated the Chachamim to, in their response, to mention Chelev? The Gemara answers, Hochi Ko'omar. The Mishnah was a bit abbreviated, and really it says as follows. Ein ne'monim olav ve'al ha'chelev. We've dashed underlined the ve'al ha'chelev because that, in effect, is what the Gemara is adding to the understanding of the Mishnah, where Rabbi Meir, in fact, says that they are not believed regarding the removal of the gid, and likewise not believed regarding the removal of chelev. V'chachom omrim ne'monim olav ve'al ha'chelev, and the Chachomim respond regarding both of those points and say that they are believed, the Tabochim are believed regarding the removal of the Gid Hanoshe and the Chelev. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.